Hi everyone, this has been a 007 for a rather unusual episode of Battles of Kingsgrave, which is an offshoot of an offshoot of a podcast of Ice and Fire. In the spirit of our great admiration for George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire and its offshoot, HBO's Game of Thrones, my best friend Kirillie and I went on a holiday recently to Northern Ireland, a kind of road trip to try and see as many of the shooting locations as possible. And we had a fantastic time. I would thoroughly encourage any of you who are within airplane distance of Northern Ireland to go and have a look at this marvellous country. To my very great shame, it's one that I'd never visited, although I'm quite well travelled. I'm appallingly badly travelled within this Great Britain and Northern Ireland. It has obviously changed somewhat since the Troubles and the terrorism fears that were very real to those of us who lived in the United Kingdom in the 1980s. And actually, even in the early 1990s, the names of cities in Northern Ireland were associated with all the wrong kinds of things. But it's a beautiful, beautiful country. It quite took my breath away in its landscape. And whether or not you're such a Game of Thrones nut, if you try and visit a lot of locations, you are going to see some very beautiful countryside, go to some amazing UNESCO World Heritage sites and national parks, and just meet some great people. It is, however, part of its charm, I guess, is that it's not that developed for tourism yet. And certainly, I think once the current Star Wars movie finishes filming and is released, it will get more intense and maybe better signposted. So Kirillie and I found that there were times when we wish some people had tipped us off on some stuff. So that's what this episode is for. If you're not planning on going to these places, then maybe it's not for you. Anyway, so if you're traveling from the UK, or maybe anywhere else in Europe, you might be flying into Belfast. The first pro tip is that there are not just one, but two airports, which I'm afraid to say that Corinne and I didn't actually realise until we got to our respective airports in London. And I suddenly realised as I was checking in, it said Belfast City. And I thought, wait a minute, at Heathrow, they only ever give you something after the capital city name if there are two airports. So I quickly WhatsApped Kiz and said, which airport are you flying into? So the pro tip is that Belfast City Airport, or George Best Airport, is right in the city centre. It's sort of between the city centre and the Titanic Quarter. It's actually a really nice airport to fly through because it's tiny. I think it used to be a military airport in the time of the unrest. It's basically a shed. You can land and be out of that place in 10 minutes. And it is literally 5 minutes drive from the Titanic Quarter, about a 10-minute drive from the city centre, which by taxi will cost you about £7, that is. All the amounts I'm going to be talking about are in pounds, so apologies for that. Although actually in a lot of places, especially in the south of Northern Ireland, because it's that sort of very porous border with the Republic of Ireland, which is part of the Eurozone, you can pay with euros too. Anyway, so I landed at Belfast City, which is where British Airways flies into, and a lot of the domestic flights from elsewhere in the United Kingdom. The other airport is called Belfast International Airport, which is actually not in Belfast, it's in Antrim. And it's a good half-hour drive, or about a 30-minute cab ride from Belfast City. As it so happens, that's probably the airport that if you're heading to do a road trip to locations you want to fly into, because it's basically a little further up towards the north coast, also known as the coastal causeway route. So it wouldn't have been a bad thing to land there. And of course, you can hire cars and whatnot. It's Britain, so you drive for Americans and many of you on the wrong side of the road. But it's fair to say that it's not very trafficky. It's very easy to drive around. I would strongly encourage you to do it. The only slightly weird thing about driving around in Northern Ireland is that driving times are longer than you think they should be from sat-nav, partly because you're mostly going to be driving on rural roads, so you're going to have sheep crossing and bizarre sort of like farm machinery and whatnot. The other reason why it takes a long time is that people in Northern Ireland don't speed. Which is a good thing, right? But when you come from London or any place where, you know, we have a 70 mile an hour driving restriction on our motorways, and most people do 80 to 90 just as a matter of course. Or if you're in town and it's meant to be 30, you do 40. Well, they do not speed. So just take that into account, because we were doing a lot of driving and I think we underestimated our driving times for all sorts of reasons. There are various ways of doing the Game of Thrones road trip. Like, I guess you can split it into 4 days, Well, that's what we did. And the first day we did the north coast of Northern Ireland. And it's quite nice because there's literally locations all along the north coast, all about sort of 20, 30 minutes drive apart, and you get to see a lot. It's quite intense if you do it all in one day. And I think in retrospect, we probably would have done it over 2 days, partly because it was just quite tiring. And secondly, because we didn't get as much time at the Giant's Causeway as we thought we might. But anyway, you can do it all in one day if you need to. The other thing to say is there's not that many hotels on the north coast, so you're probably going to have to Airbnb it. There is a hotel in Bushmills, which, for those of you who are whiskey fans, is the town of the Bushmills Distillery. It's all called, I think, the Old Bushmills Inn. There's also a hotel at the Giant's Causeway, which is quite famous. It's been there at that historic site for many years. But yeah, Airbnb, we found a very, you know, easy way to find accommodation. So what you want to do basically is get your hire car at Belfast City or Belfast International, and you're going to need to drive up to the north coast, which is going to take you on your map sort of up the motorway and then onto the A26. And you want to kind of base yourself at Castle Rock or Coleraine for the first night. And the other thing to say is you will need an old-fashioned big fat atlas map, because the sat nav and the cell phone signal is not amazing when you get to some of these coastal areas. And so if you're relying on sat nav, you are going to get hopelessly lost. So on the first day, so this is what we did. We arrived on the Wednesday night and drove. It's about like an hour and a half to 2 hours drive up to Portrush, where we were staying, which is very charming. Another thing to say, this sounds so like London, is we arrived at 9:30 at night, and there's this beautiful in Portrush sort of set of restaurants right on the bay called the Remors restaurants, and they're quite famous. And the food we had at the second night is amazing, so I'd strongly recommend it. But none of the restaurants serve food after like about 8:30 at night. So don't go with your kind of London arrogance that you're going to get food any time of day or night. And there's literally no other choice. You can, of course, drink until like 1 in the morning. That's not a problem. But yeah, if you take a late flight, don't expect to eat in the night unless you brought food with you. Okay, so day one, North Coast, you're going to want to start at Castle Rock. And basically, you're going to drive to something called Downhill Beach in County Londonderry. And both Downhill Beach and Castle Rock are well signposted. And if you type either of those into SatNav, it should come up. Basically, it's going to be on the A2 road. And Downhill Beach is amazing. It's so beautiful. You can basically drive right onto the beach. And we went there at probably 9:30 in the morning. And it was just deserted. And it's beautiful landscape. So this is basically the shooting location, or one of them, for Dragonstone. And if you remember those scenes, maybe in season 2, I think, where Davos Seaworth is walking up and down the beach with Salladhor Saan, and also where Melisandre is doing her big bonfires and telling everyone they have to worship the Red God, then it's there. And it's very easy to imagine the shooting scene. Absolutely beautiful. It's also, although I don't think you really see this in the show, Castle Rock Downhill Beach is set in front of really almost like a sheer vertical black rock cliff face with waterfalls coming down. It's really, really stunning. So from Castle Rock and Downhill Beach, you can then drive back through Portrush if you so desire. But really, the next stop on the road is going to be Bushmills, which is the town of the whiskey refinery of great international fame. Now, this is about, I would say, a 40-minute drive from Castle Rock. It's not actually a Game of Thrones filming locations, but it does seem a little bit weird that if you drive through a town that has the oldest working distillery in Ireland, that you don't stop and have a look at it. It has a distillery tour, which runs, I think it's pretty much every hour. You don't really need to book in advance. And it takes about an hour. And it's really worth doing. They take you right into the midst of this distillery. You get to see how everything works. And at the end, you get to sort of go and taste some of the whiskies, which sucked for Kimberly because she was driving that day. And you can obviously buy the Distiller's Reserve 12-year-old malt, which is absolutely amazingly beautiful. And probably grab some lunch if that's the time of day. But no, it's really worth seeing. And actually, the next stop on the tour, which is the Giant's Causeway, and is literally just a sort of 10 minutes drive, is also not a Game of Thrones location. And actually, the reason for this, we were told, is that The location scout, who's actually from Northern Ireland, didn't want to use it because he thought it was already so famous and iconic as a location. So he didn't want the kind of the famous location to sort of bring you out of the experience of watching the TV show in an imaginary landscape. But the Giant's Causeway is effectively, it's run by the National Trust, which is a British charity that preserves a lot of woodland and country houses and castles. And whenever they're organising something, it's really well done. And they've got this amazing visitor centre, which is so sensitively done, you actually can't see it from the sea. So it doesn't disturb the kind of the view and the environmental aspect of it. It is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It has these amazing hexagon pieces of rock that have come up in a causeway that would have linked through to Scotland. And we were actually there on such a sunny day. You could see the Isle of Islay, I think, and a few of the other Scottish Isles. And you realise just how, really just how close you are to Scotland at this port of Northern Ireland. There's also a place where you can stand on the Giant's Causeway where if you look to your left, you can see the Southern Irish coast. And if you look to your right, you can see the English coast. And as many people said, well, that's the source of the Northern Ireland troubles, right? That it's this region that's torn between two very strong cultures and religions, I guess. So the Giant's Causeway is lovely. You can wander down to the causeway either with an audio tour or with a guide. The guides are free. The tickets, I think, are £15 to get in. That includes parking. It's well worth going. I mean, it's just one of the most beautiful, stunning things I've ever seen. You can, however, if you have the time, and we didn't, and that was such a shame, spend a good half a day just trekking sort of back from the causeway up into the hills and cliffs overlooking it. And I think that it's a tremendous shame we didn't sort of budget for that amount of time while we were there. So it's something I would definitely recommend. So anyway, that's taken you basically from Castle Rock through Portrush to Bushmills and Giant's Causeway. So that's pretty much half a day, even if you're running around. And they have a really good restaurant, both in the Bushmills Distillery and in the Giant's Causeway. Highly recommended. Great coffee. And then you basically have to drive down to Ballantoy Bay. Now, Ballantoy Harbour, again, it's probably, gosh, a 15-minute drive from the Giant's Causeway. And again, it's signposted. It's part of the Coastal Causeway route. Now, do not hire a big car, because the road to get down from the Coastal Causeway road, which is quite high up on the cliffs, down to Ballantoy Harbour is incredibly twisty-turny. If any of you have done those kind of knife point turns on the southern coast of France, you'll know what I mean. You can barely get one car down, let alone if another one's coming the other way up. And they don't allow sort of coaches and anything large to get down there. And when you do, you find the most beautiful, tiny, tiny, tiny little harbour with shingle rocks, a sandy little cove, and a mysterious-looking cave, and a tiny little gift shop and coffee shop there. And that is basically where they filmed predominantly for the Iron Islands. So when Theon Greyjoy finally goes back to visit his family, and, you know, there's that scene in Game of Thrones where his sister comes to meet him and he doesn't realise it's the sister and it's all very awkward. That is all filmed there. And again, it doesn't take much imagination. It looks exactly as it is and very, very beautiful. So you can take a few pics there. There's not really much to do. It's tiny. I mean, it's, you know, you can walk one end to the other in 10 minutes. But definitely worth going down that twisty road to get to it. When you come back up that twisty road, you drive another 5 minutes along that coastal causeway, and you will hit Carrick-a-Reed Island, which is amazing. It's another National Trust site. I think from memory, you pay something like £5 or £10. It's not as much as the Giant's Causeway. You park up your car. There's a tiny, tiny little coffee shop, but by far not as good as the Giant's Causeway. And then you walk to the Carrick-a-Reed Rope Bridge. And while you're walking, which is very beautiful, it's about a 45-minute walk, and effectively you're walking sort of along the coast and then down to this rope bridge that links to these other two islands. So if you think of the pivotal scene in Game of Thrones where a certain Greyjoy king is pushed off a bridge between two islands, then that's what you're looking for. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, actually. It's stunning. Although, as Curly pointed out, why didn't the salmon fishermen who built this bridge so they could fish just not sail underneath? I have to also confess that we both basically chickened out of actually crossing the rope bridge. If you have vertigo or any kind of like fear of heights, it is not for you. Although it's definitely worth walking down to it and then walking back because the scenery is amazing. But, and as one of the people we met said, you know, it's probably the safest bridge in Northern Ireland because they've had to make it so safe. But I'm sure it's amazing if you do it. And lots of people on Facebook have told me how they have done it. But anyway, it's, again, it doesn't really look like they needed to do much to that set to make it work. So, okay, so you've done the Larry Bain Karakari rope bridge, which is all very Stormland, very Iron Islandy. And then you drive along to a place called Merlo Bay. Now, to get to Merlo Bay, all this has been driving along the A2, which is the coastal road. You kind of drive through Ballycastle, and then you're going to turn off the A2 to lots of lochs. And you're going to need a really good map, which has very detailed country roads. And your sat nav's going to conk out. And then you're going to think you're driving through what's basically a private estate, because I've got a feeling it is a private estate. And to get to Merlo Bay, I seriously thought we were going to die. I'm really pleased Kirillie was driving this day, because we were in this shitty little Vauxhall Corsa. She did the whole drive down this twisty, windy road, which took about a good half an hour, basically in first gear. And there are lots of points where you just think you're driving over a cliff edge because the vertical drops are so extreme. But when you've done this absolutely hair-raising drive, and I would say that from the Karakari rope bridge down actually into Merlo Bay, assuming you're going to get lost once or twice, you're looking at a good 45 minutes to an hour, you're going to come up against the most beautiful, beautiful deserted beach. Apparently very, very famous for very famous for birdwatchers as well. And that is basically the Storm's End was used to film Storm's End, but it was also used to film some of Pike as well. But regardless, it's just actually in all of our sightseeing, that was my favorite spot and location. I think partly because it is so just hard to get to, so a lot of people don't. So when you've visited that, you then wind your way back up that incline and you get back on the A2 and you drive to Cushendon. And Cushendon is another 30 minutes drive. And it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful drive. What I would caution you to do is to get back. When you're from Merlo Bay, there's two options to get to Cushendon. You can get back on the A2 and do the sort of the highway way, which I would really recommend. Or you can do the twisty, turny, you know, covered in sheep country route. Now, the country route obviously is very pretty. I think it's quite tough to drive, especially if you're in a really small Vauxhall Corsa. And I wouldn't want to do that in rain or bad weather. So judge it by the weather. It was a very sunny day when we were there and it was very beautiful. But I think it does also take twice the time. Cushendon, I think, is one of the most beautiful villages in Northern Ireland. It is a picture postcard village. And what was really shocking to me coming from actually quite a villagey part of England is that the villages we'd seen up until then actually weren't that architecturally pretty. There's a lot of sort of pebble dash, quite utilitarian architecture. But Cushendon in that late afternoon sun was really something very special indeed. This is the place where you're going to find the location where Melisandre births the shadow baby. But they obviously do not want you to find it. It's a very cute private village. It's on a cove, so it's on the seashore. When you get there, as you're looking straight out to sea, like right at the centre of that crescent cove, you want to be on the extreme right-hand side. There will be signs saying private property, do not enter. So you can see how you feel about whether you want to drive into there. We actually did genuinely drive in accidentally because we didn't realise till it was too late. And then you get out of your car, or I did, and you wander around through a sort of back passage and you find yourself opening out onto a cove, which is where that filming was done. And when you see it and you see that rock arch, I mean, it's very unmistakable, but it's really not obvious. And we were literally about to turn the car around and go back. So see how you feel. I think if you go in the height of summer and there's more people trying to do this Game of Thrones tour, then the locals might get even more kind of reluctant to let you onto their private land. But if you can see it, it's really pretty. And actually, you know what? Cushendon is just worth visiting anyway. So that is the end of your first day, basically, on the northern coast. You've then got to come back a little bit on yourself. And you can choose. You can either do this bit sort of between Bushmills and Carriker Reed. There's no real obvious place to do it, but you want to see the dark hedges. And the dark hedges, you can just punch into SatNav, and it's BT538TP, or it's the Bregach Road, BREGAGH, and you will have SatNav because that's a bit more inland. And that's why it's a little bit out of the way. You're sort of almost doubling back to yourself. It's sort of directly south from Carriker Reed Island on the B147. And the dark hedges are famous as this very, very ancient road lined with beech trees, and that is what was used for the King's Road in Game of Thrones. So you know the scene where Arya and Gendry and everyone's sitting on the back of that wagon being wheeled off by the Night's Watch? I think it's the end of season one. It's that place, and it is really magnificently beautiful, but we saw it not in summer, so the trees were bare, so it looked a little bit less beautiful than it might have done. Actually, it photographed really well, so maybe it's just one of those places that is a bit unimpressive in real life, but photographs really well. The other thing is that when you follow signs to get there, you don't need to pay any money. You just park on the road and take photographs of the trees. It's in the middle of nowhere. There's no traffic coming down. But some enterprising guy has basically built a sort of conference center and hotel, and all the signs kind of point to that. It's like, come and use this car park, and it's just a blatant ripoff for him to get business in that place. Ignore that, you can drive right onto the road. Apparently we were told in summer it's full of coaches, and you know, you can't really take pictures because there's so many tourists coming there to take pictures. So I would say April or May is probably the time to go and do this kind of a road trip for the best weather, and indeed for just, you know, we had very few people at the locations we were at, which was really nice. So that's the end of your first day of Game of Thrones locations. A lot to fit in. Ideally, you would want to spend the night either in Ballymoney, which I guess would be the nearest largish town from the Dark Hedges. You don't really want to have to drive back up to the coast as we did to Portrush, because it's just making the journey down to Winterfell the longer. And in fact, if you didn't have to do the Dark Hedges or had done it earlier, then maybe Cushendon would be, or Cushendal would be a nice place to stay overnight. So that's kind of it for the North Coast. And then effectively, you're going to want to drive either that night, or the next, you'll be knackered if you do it all one day, or the next morning down through Belfast on the A44, 26, M22, M2. It's basically, it's not kind of one direct highway, but any good map or sat-nav will give it to you, to a place called Castle Ward. Now, if you imagine Northern Ireland, you're going from the north coast down through Belfast, which is the capital city on the sort of the eastern, midway on the east coast, down to almost the bottom of the east coast. And it's a place called Strangford, and it hosts Castle Ward, and that is basically the place that did all the Winterfell filming. It's also a National Trust property, which means you have to pay some amount to get in, but after that you can pretty much sort of guide yourself around. Now, Castle was really interesting because you can definitely see the castle that's Winterfell, and you can imagine how it was dressed up for Winterfell, but I think Kieran and I were a bit underwhelmed. They've also got the sort of castle tower that forms one of the twins that they then superimposed on the other twin, so to say. And they've also got a lot of the locations where Jaime and Brienne were sort of walking around, and where they come across those three women who've been strung up, and then they have a first sword fight. So there's a fair amount to sort of walk around and see, but probably will only take you an hour or so. It's probably less impressive than I thought. However, around that area, into Downpatrick and out to the Mountains of Mourne, there are a lot of really good locations. And you've got a choice to make here, because you can do some of them on your own, or you can hire a guide. And all I would say is that I'll point out which of these are publicly available and which are on private land. We did use a guide because that was the only way we could get access to certain ones of them. It does cost a lot of money. You're looking at anywhere up to £300 to £600 a day, depending on how luxurious you go. It also stops you driving around for a day, which gives you a break. So see how you feel. Okay, so the ones that are publicly available, everything in Castle Ward you can do. So that's the Twins, Winterfell, and some of Jaime and Brienne's road trip. You can then go to the monastery at Inch. So again, that's very well signposted. It's just the other side of Strangford. So Inch Abbey, as in Inch. It's in Downpatrick, which is the big town that's on the A25. And that is where, in the ruined monastery, they shot, if you remember the iconic scene where King Rob is declared King in the North, which is one of the coolest scenes, that's where they shot it. So very, very cool indeed. You can then go into, basically, there is a site just near there, which is literally the only site that was signposted as a Game of Thrones location in probably the whole of Northern Ireland. And it's right on the river Strang, and that is basically where Edmure tries and epic fails to kind of light the pyre of his dead father. And they actually do have a sign there saying it's a Game of Thrones location. But yeah, it's you can find it. It's basically signposted quite well from Inch Abbey, but like I say, I think you'd be better off with a guide. You can then go to Tollymoor National Park, which is basically next to a town called Newcastle. So if you're driving from Downpatrick, you're going to go down the A25 and then turn off onto the A2. And Tollymoor National Castle has lots of sites in it, such as it's the site of the Haunted Forest. So the very first episode of Game of Thrones, where you see in the prologue the White Walkers and the massacre that the Night's Watch come upon, that's shot there. You see where they have, all sorts of filming locations where you're using haunted forests and sort of north of the wall stuff. It's a national park, so you can get in. Frankly, Kirill and I were just agog that anyone would be able to find those locations if they didn't have a guide. They are not signposted at all. There is not a forest map that says this is where they are. And when you get there, they're really amazing. I mean, you can absolutely see that this was the place they were. Actually, there was a lot of Craster's Keep stuff shot there as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think Tollymoor Forest Park is definitely somewhere worth seeing anyways. But I think you really need to have a guide. And then from Tollymoor National Forest, you can visit the Mountains of Mourne. And the Mountains of Mourne are basically, they're not really mountains, right? They're large hills. It's where they filmed a lot of the stuff of season one for Dany. So when she's married her husband and they're sort of, them and the Khalasar, they're trooping around the sort of the grasslands. Very, very beautiful, very dramatic, and definitely worth seeing. Again, like if a guy takes you and shows you this is where they shot X, Y, and Z with the Dothraki Horde and Saw Gerrera, you're going to get it. You don't have to have a guide. It's beautiful to see, but I think it's going to be harder. There are actually two books that our guy had with him, as well as all the iPad material, called Inside HBO's Game of Thrones, which shows the shooting locations and how they did them. And I think if you're going to do it self-guided, those are probably absolutely essential to have. And then there's one very final shooting location on the other side of the Mountains of Mourne, which is the Mother of Mountains. I don't know if you remember that scene with Dany. And that's literally on private land on someone's sheep farm. And you need to be in a 4x4 for that. You need to be in a car that has the wherewithal to drive across a shallow river. So again, that one you definitely will only see with a guide. If you do all of that, that's going to take you a full day. So Winterfell itself, probably only an hour. Tollymoor is maybe a half hour, 45 minute, sorry, Inch Abbey then is maybe a half hour drive away, very close to the Edmure River scene. That'll take you an hour. An hour's drive to Tollymoor, an hour to wander around it, an hour's drive to the Mountains of Mourne, drive around. I mean, that's a full day, and that's if you know where you're going. If you don't know where you're going, budget a bit more time. And that's pretty much taken you from the southern east coast corner of Northern Ireland, a little bit inland. And really, I would say after that, you want to stay somewhere overnight. And you've got two options. You can go back into Strangford and Portaferry. So back towards Winterfell. If you stay in Portaferry, you're going to get amazing views over the Twins, so to say, to Castle Ward. But there is nothing in Portaferry. There's the Portaferry Hotel that has recently been refurbed. There's not any restaurants, so you'll have to take the ferry, clues in the name, across to Strangford, which you can do. It's cheap and it runs every half hour till quite late, but it just seemed like a bit of a pain. We stayed there and we wouldn't have in retrospect. In Strangford itself, there's a hotel called the Cuan, C-U-A-N, Which only has 9 rooms, but it is where all the stars stayed when they were filming, including Sean Bean. So if you can get one of those rooms, you can stay there. And the restaurant is very good. There's also, if your taste is a little bit more, if your taste is a little bit more posh, then there is a very nice golf course called the Slieve Donard, S-L-I-E-V-E, Donard, D-O-N-A-R-D, which is also in the Tollymoor Forest. And I think that's actually quite a nice place to stop. They've got a really nice spa hotel there, if that's where your pound stretches to. Otherwise, you probably just want to find an Airbnb somewhere in Newcastle or Dundrum or Castle Wallen, and then journey on from there the following day. So the next day, we visited a location that isn't on the discovernorthernisland.com website, where they put everything to do with Game of Thrones and all the locations. So that's not quite up to date. It's called Gosford Forest Park and contains Gosford Castle. So for all of you fans of Julian Fellowes, this is the original Gosford Park. And this is basically River Run, and it's really worth seeing. It's about an hour's drive if you stay overnight in Tollymoor. If you head back towards Castle Ward, it's a 2-hour drive from there to Gosford Park. And part of the reason it takes so long is it's all windy, windy country roads. It's beautifully stunning countryside, but you cannot go fast. It's not a big distance, it's just like you're 30 miles an hour the entire way there. There's also, be warned, not really anywhere to stop for food or anything along route unless you find a pub that's open. It's kind of like a weird quirk of the places we were in Northern Ireland, that they don't seem to have a lot of chain supermarkets as we would expect in England. So pretty much in these small towns you'll have like a service station, which won't even be a BP or a Shell, it'll be a Maxol or something, with a spa attached. And some of these spas are amazing and they're quite big, but yeah, that's kind of where you're going to be getting your food of a morning. So when you get to Gosford Park, it's a £5 to enter per car, and you park up, and basically it's just a forest park, and they've got like a dig, some deer, and they've got like an exotic poultry enclosure, which caused as much merriment, and some caravan parks. So basically, Gosford Park is still a private residence, so really they don't want people seeing it. However, if you walk the forest trails, you go really right round the castle and you're very, very close to it. So you can take lots of lovely pictures, and it does look incredibly river runny. And as Kiralee said, by this point she really wanted to see a castle, because a lot of the stuff in Northern Ireland that's called a castle, basically it's like kind of, you know, one wall and half a turret left. So it was quite nice to see a proper castle that was still in situ, and it does look exactly like River Run, and it's only a fiver. So when you have visited that, you can stop at one of the many small towns on the way for lunch. Armagh, very beautiful, 2 cathedrals, good place to stop for lunch. And then you're going to want to head over to the geoparks. Now, this is the bit where we kind of epic failed, because we weren't planning to go to Gosford Park, and the geopark is already a 3-hour drive from Tollymoor, and then we did this diversion that really wasn't kind of sensible. So I would say, if you're going to do Gosford Park, don't do geopark in the same day as we did, because it's just shit and you feel knackered. Take your time, noodle down through the back roads of western Northern Ireland, and maybe stay the night in Enniskillen, which we didn't go to, so I don't know if it's any good, but yeah, I mean, that would be the closest town. Because actually, the geopark, it covers this huge expanse and straddles the border of Northern and Southern Ireland. And also, be careful, because if you've got your hire car, a lot of the times you've rented that car just to be valid in the Great Britain and Northern Ireland, not in Southern Ireland, and you have to pay extra for that. So Kiralee was forever like traumatized that we were like driving into the wrong country by mistake, because it's not signposted. And then the next day, you can go to the Marble Arch Caves. So the geopark's huge. The most famous part of it is the Marble Arch Caves, which were not actually a filming location for Game of Thrones, but if you go there, it's going to make sense as to what you then see. Effectively, sat-nav cellular signals not going to be of any use whatsoever. It's also not hugely well signposted, so you do need a map, and you probably will go wrong at some point. But effectively, you're going to probably want to come out of Enniskillen on the A4 and then follow some signs and see what goes on. It is basically this most amazing, beautiful set and huge set of caves underground. So you walk down all these steps. You've got to go on guided tours. And they're pretty much every hour, and they last a good hour. And there's a lot of walking and a lot of steps in slippery conditions. They take not even just trainers, but proper shoes that have got some grip. Down and down and down and down into the caves. You get into these tiny little boats. You're sort of traveling through these caves on the underground sort of river. And then you get out and start walking through. You see these amazing stalactite and stalagmite formations. And then eventually you sort of come back up the windy steps to the top. Really very, very breathtaking indeed. Now, part of that whole underground waterway and cavern system is the Pol Nagolim Cave, which is where Beric Dondarrion's hideout is filmed. So it's this cave with a waterfall in front, and you step behind it and you see the hideout. Now, sadly, because we had already done Gosford Park in the morning and then tried to do the Marble Arch Caves, we didn't make it to Pol Nagolim Cave. Part of the reason is that if you're trying to navigate out of Marble Arch to the cave, which is a good 45-minute drive away through the National Forest, nothing is signposted, the sat-nav doesn't work. It's basically part of Belmore Forest, but even that's really hard to find. I would love to hear from anyone who actually made it. I think the best way to do it would be now, in retrospect, to drive the 45 minutes back into Enniskillen and then follow the B81 maybe out and then take the turning off. But anyway, Beric Dondarrion's cave, so well hidden we couldn't fracking find it. And we did spend a good hour and a half driving around the back, and we just thought, God, the sun's going to set and it's going to be like some horror movie, these two idiot girls driving around in a Vauxhall Corsa, running out of fuel, and a guy in a leather apron coming at us with a chainsaw. Belmore Forest, Pol Nagolim Cave if you can find it. And then you're kind of done with that part of Mid-Ulster. Or is it more like Fermanagh and Omagh? I'm not sure. Anywho, so that is that. We're also going to do a lot of driving around Lake Inishmore, which is kind of cool. And those are all the Game of Thrones locations that are there to be found. You can then drive back into Belfast, or you could have done that at the start. It's about it shouldn't be as long as this because it's not that far, but everything just takes forever. It's about a good 2-2.5 hour drive, although you do pick up motorway, so it's a bit less painful, although less scenic. And when you get into Belfast, you really don't need a car because the distances aren't far and the taxis are really super cheap. So drop your car back, ideally at Belfast City Airport, because that's the one that's going to be close into town. You can stay at hotels or B&Bs, as is your preference. We stayed at the Malmaison, which was absolutely fine. Pretty cheap, the hotels. There's a big Hilton by the Titanic Quarter. Just try and stay somewhere in town so you can walk everywhere. So there are kind of three things to see. Well, there's lots of stuff to see in Belfast. Let me not be arrogant and say there's only three things to see there. So there's the Crumlin Road Jail, which was built in 1845. It was a working prison until 1996. And for those of us who know something of Northern Irish history and the Troubles, it's fairly famous. They do guided tours around there, and that's really interesting. You can also go to the Falls Road and do a Falls Road tour, or you can just go there independently. But frankly, given the fact that the locals aren't particularly happy to see people there, I think I would go on an organised some kind of tour. And that is basically the scene of all the footage that if you grew up in the UK during that period, you would have seen on the news with, the Protestants versus Catholics and the sides of those terraced houses, end of terraced houses, painted with all the kind of the propaganda on the side and all that iconography. Really interesting to see. And interesting to see how Belfast has moved on. I mean, we were walking past the Belfast City Hall, which is actually really beautiful. And Kirti was saying that the last time she was there in Belfast 20 years ago, this was surrounded by, tanks and police, and you just couldn't get anywhere near it. Whereas now you can go on a City Hall tour. I'm not sure why you'd want to, but it the beauty is the outside, it's the architecture. Belfast, it's not the world's most beautiful city centre. It's mostly pedestrianised around the shopping streets, but it's full of probably too much history. And then there are some very, very good restaurants there. And to give you a kind of a guide as to how cheap it is relative to Southern England, we were finding wines on restaurant lists in the best restaurants in Belfast that were cheaper to buy in the restaurant than if you'd go into a supermarket to buy them in England. So we definitely ate and drank very well when we finally hit Belfast, having been a little bit nonplussed by the quality of the food otherwise. And then the other big thing to do in Belfast is the Titanic Museum. And I have to say, you know, whenever I travel around the world, I go to museums. And this is one of the best organized, most sensitively rendered museums I've ever been to. You need a good 4 hours to get through everything. And there's three kind of separate parts to it. The thing to do is buy a ticket called the White Star Line Pass. I think it's about 25 quid a person, which sounds like a lot, but it includes a lot. And if not, you'll end up buying it piecemeal and it ends up costing more. So when you get there, first of all, on the Titanic Quarter, you've got the tender ship to the Titanic, which has been rescued from the rust heap and beautifully, lovingly restored. So this is where the White Star Line was trying to advertise the luxury of the Titanic from the moment you set foot on the tender ship. Now, if you remember your Titanic lore, the Titanic started out in Southampton, but then went via France, Cherbourg, and then back through Queenstown in Southern Ireland, which is now called Co, and then on, well, intended to New York. In Southampton, it could just dock in the harbour because it was a deep water dock, but in Cherbourg, it couldn't quite get into the harbour there. So the White Star Line fitted out this tender ship, which took passengers from the shore onto the ship. And it's just beautiful. The level of luxury is unbelievable. And it's kind of hilarious because they've even restored the toilets. So if you go to the ladies, it's this sort of 1911 built beautiful bathroom and ladies powder room, as they called it in those days. So you get to sort of have a wander around that ship, and it takes a good, I guess, would say 45 minutes. Then you go into the museum itself, and the architecture of the museum is amazing. It's been built on a star, so on a four if you look at it from aerial. Each of those quarters looks like the prow of a ship, so it has the exact height of the Titanic from sea surface to the top deck to give you a sense of its scale. The benches that circle the museum you would think are just scattered around, but actually form the Morse code signals that were sent out. The museum is built on the slipway where the Titanic was built, and the shape of the Titanic is sketched out onto the ground. They've got a memorial garden there for the people who died, which is just very movingly done. There's so much in the architecture that is symbolic of the tragedy, and therefore you can take this 1 hour audio tour, which is included in your ticket price. And the guy we had was amazing. He kind of takes you through exactly why the museum has been built as it has been built and some of the history of the White Star Line, which is amazing. They also have the original drawing offices and HQ offices of Harland and Wolff, who were the architects and builders of the ship. And the drawing offices actually aren't open at the moment. They're being restored. But when they're restored, they're going to look amazing. And there's two of them. I think one's going to be a museum and the other's going to be a restaurant and hotel. So maybe if I go back, that's where I'll stay. You then go into the museum itself, and it's just brilliant. They give you all the social historic context of the time, which I love, all the political chaos and upheaval. They give you the rivalry between Cunard and the White Star Line, luxury versus speed. And then you go into this amazing kind of, it's kind of a bit like a sort of theme park ride where you sit in these sort of suspended chair buggy things, and it sort of takes you through almost like the vertical height of the museum so that you can see all the people building the ship with animatronics. It's just really beautifully done. And by the end of it, you get a sense of real pride in the workmanship that went into that thing. And so as well as the awful, awful loss of life, you get this awful sadness that all this workmanship, the pride of Belfast, it just went down, you know, all these years of work just put to waste. But you also get to grips with the scale of the ship. And that is very hard to do, I think, when you don't have the ship. So they did a really good job. And then they take you through into the night of the disaster. And they finish it up with showing you a lot of the footage of how they've then found the Titanic and what's been brought off of it. So you get this very holistic sense of the journey of the ship, of its social context. And it's really very deeply affecting, and it's very sensitively done. I really cannot speak highly of it enough. And there were lots of like sort of surprising highlights of this trip. Merlot Bay on the northern coast was not a location I was particularly looking forward to or knew that was going to be amazing, but that was so pretty. Tollymoor National Forest, stunning, the Mountains of Mourne. The Geopark marble arch was just amazing. But I would say actually the Titanic Museum really blew me away. It was it's worth visiting Belfast just to see it. And yeah, so it's worth taking the time. So you need about a full day in Belfast. The good news is it's just a 5 minute drive to Belfast City Airport. You don't need to be there more than an hour before your flight because you can move through quite quickly. Flights from the UK, you can get Squeezyjet and Ryanair flights for like 15 quid basically plus tax. British Airways flights about 100 quid, Aer Lingus around the same too. Plenty of flights through the day, so kind of easy to get to. Or of course you can drive across and use the ferry. So, other impressions of Northern Ireland? It does feel very different to the rest of Great Britain. It's kind of weird, like even if I travel to Scotland or Wales, yes, it's different to London or south of England, but it definitely feels like the same country. And perhaps too much so, because like all the brands on the high streets are the same, like all the shops are the same, and you know you're going to find a Starbucks, and you know you're going to find this and that, and I don't know, it just feels very samey. And more or less it's the same law as well, right? I think Northern Ireland does feel different. You can definitely still see the impact of the troubles, even all these years later. It was kind of freaking me out a little bit in some of the northern coastal towns where the unionist side, the side that wants to stay with the United Kingdom, has painted the curbstones red, white, and blue. It's also weird how, unlike in England, I mean, we've all got regional elections coming up, in England you rarely see people put up political placards showing their support in front of their houses. And you also very rarely see politicians put up placards sort of to lampposts advertising themselves, so to say. But that's incredibly, incredibly popular in Northern Ireland. And yeah, so in many of the towns you'd see these placards with, you know, smiling faces on them of people from Sinn Féin. So that is the political party that was the counterpart to the IRA, which did all the terrorist attacks. So it's kind of like, it's just weird. It's just a different political sensibility to what you're used to. And I think I've never felt within my own country, so to say, of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, to be in a place that's so different to where I grew up from. But I would have to say that it is one of the most beautiful areas of this nation that I've ever been to, and I'm really thoroughly pleased that we went. We were told by everyone that the weather was exceptional when we were there. We had 4 days of blissful sunshine, 17 degrees, and apparently it's very rainy and miserable and cold most of the time, so we would have had a less good time if that were the case. But it was stunning when we were there. Yeah, that's the Game of Thrones tour. I think we did it in 4 days. I think you would more easily do it in 5 or 6. It really warrants that. It's a beautiful place. The only other final thing to say is I know there's a lot of Tolkien fans on the forums, maybe Tolkien first and foremost. The rumour goes that while Tolkien's language of Elvish was inspired by the Welsh language and the Finnish language, that actually the landscapes of the Shire and Rohan were inspired by Northern Ireland. And actually, a lot of the places we visited as Game of Thrones locations really felt like Tolkien to me. So a lot of the area around Armagh felt like the Shire. The Mountains of Mourne and the area around that very much felt like Rohan. Tollymoor definitely felt like the where we meet the Ents. And definitely there were areas around the Giant's Causeway and the Marble Arch Caves that felt a bit Mordor-like, like if you'd have had the lighting right, could have been Mordor. So I think if you're a fan of Tolkien, you'll get a kick out of it too, that it's very much that landscape that you can imagine the characters running through as they continue their story. So if you've borne with me, I can't believe I've actually spent 50 minutes talking about all this. I didn't realize we did that much. But I hope if you are planning a trip, that helps, because I think if Kiralee and I had known what we knew now, we might have planned the trip slightly differently. We still had a great time. I will definitely go back. And I would encourage you all, if you're going to make a trip, do so now, because once Star Wars comes out, it's going to go bonkers and you'll just be surrounded by tourists everywhere. So thank you for listening. And if you've got any questions on this, feel free to ping me on the forums at A Podcast of Ice and Fire, and I'm happy to help. And also, finally, I guess a plug for Winterfell Tours, which is the company we used when we did the day trip to Winterfell. It really made life easier, and like I said, we got into a few locations that you can't get into otherwise. a week. Thanks for listening.